be talking about is a study that we did in Philadelphia. Michelle Tatey, who could not be here today, is really sort of the genius behind the study and was the health interventionist on the study. And so a lot of the work I'm going to be talking about is the work that Michelle did, and I'm sort of coming in on the back end as a new professor at Drexel in the School of Public Health. I want to talk a little bit about this sort of cumbersome word that I'm going to be using, non-heterosexually identified women, and we jokingly refer to it as knee-high. This whole study was an intervention, a HRSA-funded SPINS intervention for women with HIV at a clinic for women for people with HIV in Philadelphia. And it's about 185 women participated in the intervention. And we were really curious about sort of the women who were having sex with women. And because we did not have a hand in sort of designing the study, there were sort of 15 different sites in the SPIN study, we just sort of had to deal with the data that we got. And so we were very interested about the sort of women who would be having sex with women. And the questions that they were asked, were sort of, are you straight, heterosexual, are you gay / homosexual, bisexual, other? And so there wasn't even a term for lesbians. And so the sort of most accurate way, albeit cumbersome, is to describe the sample that I'm going to be talking about as non-heterosexually identified. I should also say that I'm talking about a very tiny sample. So of the 185 women in the entire study, only 32 of them identify as non-heterosexual. However, we believe that even though obviously the statistics are not going to be meaningful because the sample is so small, this has some really important implications for larger work and interventions with this population. So what I'm going to talk about is just mostly the quantitative data and just give you a few quotes if time allows. And then most importantly, what I want to do is talk about the implications of not addressing the needs of lesbian and bisexual women who have HIV in interventions. Okay, so there are more questions than answers in terms of who is this population. The CDC reports that they're about roughly, women who have sex with women are about roughly 3% of reported AIDS cases. And one of the problems is that CDC and other bodies collecting this information really do not ask important questions. They fail to include information about female sex partners if the physician didn't ask about it or if the woman doesn't volunteer. And so we just don't know enough about who these people are. And one of the problems is also that they focus on heterosexual risk behaviors solely and just do not ask about women's sexual behaviors with women. The CDC's hierarchical system is a problem. So they'll start asking about injection drug use, they'll ask about heterosexual sex, but they're not going to ask about anything else. And then also we just have these poor measures. As I said before, even in the study that we looked at, we were really sort of shocked to see that they didn't even use the word sort of lesbian. You know, so it's very clear sort of a male system that they sort of imposed on the data. And so really poor measures are another hindrance in terms of this research. The research, though, suggests that it's really important to look at women who have sex with women or lesbians or however you want to talk about them in terms of HIV prevention programs. There are quite a few studies that talk about that women who have sex with women also lots of times report having more male and female sex partners, that women who have sex with women often perceive that they are at low risk, that often they don't have no idea about what to do in terms of protecting themselves or their partners from sexually transmitted diseases. And no surprises, most of the interventions focus almost exclusively on male condoms and on women having sex with men. So what we wanted to do was we just wanted to explore, okay, one, who are these women, and what are some of their demographic characteristics, and we also wanted to look at their sexual risk behaviors, their pregnancy intentions, and their substance use patterns. And then we also wanted to compare them to the larger heterosexual sample on these different outcomes. So as I said before, this is a HRSA-funded SPINS project, and the goal of this was just reducing HIV HIV-positive women's sexual risk behaviors. And so the intervention was sort of structured around three different messages. One, when the women would see their healthcare providers, gave them HIV prevention messages. We had a larger skills-based group-level intervention. And then we had peer support groups run by two HIV-positive health educators. And those groups were basically devised by the health, those peer leaders, and they focused on the topics that the women said that they wanted. And so it was in that that some of the women were saying, well, wait a minute, all of this stuff is just focused on condom use in heterosexual women, and our needs are not being addressed. So everybody received the Safer Sex messages. Half of them attended the GLI, the group level intervention, and the peer-led support groups. And the primary outcomes of this study is condom use with partners and also disclosing one's HIV status to sexual partners. And we use the ACASI and at different time points, 0, 6, 12, and 18 months. Okay. So with the data that I'm going to be presenting today, I'm actually just in the interest of time, I'm just going to jump over to that. So you see. Okay, so here are the breakdowns by sexual identification in the study. And so again, I'm going to be focusing on that very small 32. This sample is mostly African American, mostly low income, which of course mirrors the HIV epidemic among women in the United States. As you can see, most of them report an income of less than $10,000 a year. Now, this is where we wanted to look at the non-heterosexual women and the heterosexual comparisons. And if you look in the column on the right in the red, you see that the non-heterosexual women were significantly more likely than the heterosexual women to report having engaged in sex work, to report selling drugs, and to report hustling. So, you know, doing whatever you got to do to get by. In terms of health characteristics, not particularly different. However, when we asked them about how they thought that they became infected, you see that the non-heterosexual women were much more likely, significantly more likely to report injection drug use, that they had shared needles. In terms of sexual behaviors, no significant differences on the different behaviors except that the non-heterosexual women were significantly more likely to report a greater number of male partners in the last 6 months. And so these are just some a snapshot of what some of the women said in the peer groups. One woman says, "We feel like we don't have to use rubber since we got another woman, and if you're sticking with your partner, you shouldn't have to worry about no rubber, no plastic, no whatever. That's where we get fooled. Now they got data on the risk of female-to-female transmission, and that's the data I need." And sadly, that was not the data that was presented in the intervention because it was not designed for this group. Another woman talks about, well, by me being a gay woman, it was a little uncomfortable, and she's talking about the experiences of talking in the group, because they were talking about their men and stuff, and I wanted to talk about my women experiences, but now we all just know that I am gay. And then she goes on to say, next, we have a peer session on gay women. So this is problematic, too, because what she's saying is that she had to disclose maybe when she may not have wanted to in order to get the information that she needed. So the key findings of the study are that the knee-high women were more likely than their heterosexual counterparts to report the following risk behaviors: HIV infection via needles, having engaged in sex work, hustling, or selling drugs for money, and having had more male sex partners in the past 6 months. And so the study limitations, as I said, the sample size of 32 is so small. What we're getting ready to do is get data from the other 14 sites in the study, and we want to do a larger analysis with a larger N to see if these same patterns hold up. There is, of course, another problem, another limitation is the presumption of heterogeneity, that we can just sort of lump all these women together as if they were some type of monolith. But, of course, it's certainly, with an already small sample, breaking out the bisexual women, the women who identified as bisexual and the women who identified as other would have been problematic. But that we recognize that as a key limitation. As I said, another problem is just measures, sort of heterosex's focus, that if you're studying women, then, you know, you're only going to ask them about heterosexual risk behaviors. And that is reflected in the poorly designed measures that were used, that sexual identity was based on a male model, just in the language gay, homosexual, when studies have clearly showed that for most people that connotes male, that does not connote women, that the questions were just focused on identity and didn't ask anything about behavior at all, which is a major limitation. So what it's clear to us based on this, based on our study, that there are women who have sex with women who are HIV positive and they have unique prevention needs that are often neglected in interventions. And also that evaluation methods that don't capture these behaviors really sort of limit the understanding of women's risk reduction needs. And this is something that I find particularly shameful more than 25 years into this epidemic, that there's still so much that we don't know and that there's still populations that are left out. So some implications. We need more epidemiological data. We need better data about women who have sex with women with HIV. And we need research with larger samples and more diverse samples and more socioeconomically diverse samples as well. That we really need more research to understand, like, what is the context in which risk happen. So, for example, for the women who are reporting injection drug use and who are reporting having more male partners, we really need to know more about that, the context and how that shapes risk. That more research is needed to find out what is the impact of having these sort of heterosexist programs that really don't take into account the needs of women who have sex with women or lesbian, bisexual women. I mean, are people... By not having that information, are people engaging in much more risk because they simply don't have the information that they need in order to protect themselves and their partners? That another implication is we need effective risk reduction programs that are really designed, not a sort of attack on, like, oh yeah, and then we want to, you know, we're just going to add on some things to this population, but that are really central to the needs of women who are non-heterosexually identified. We need, and this is something I'm particularly interested in, and that's relevant to this panel's focus on identification, is we really need to understand for women, particularly these sort of low-income black women in this study, the role of sexual identification and risk. We've done a lot of talking about this with black and Latino men in terms of, you know, MSM and versus identity issues of gay and bisexual and bisexual labels, but are there some lessons from that that are as applicable to women, but that we just have not researched? And in terms of actual prevention programs for women with HIV, we need to know to what extent are the programs just not addressing the needs of this population. Again, it's a topic that we need more research on. We need to know what are the specific sexual risk reduction needs, things that we haven't even imagined, but that those women certainly can tell us, that we need to acknowledge from the design of all of these programs that these women who are having sex with women, that they are there, and so that we need to have messages that are broad, for targeted to all women, and that are inclusive of partners regardless of sex. And as always, it's always a real good idea to have the population of interest involved in an integral way in designing prevention messages. This intervention would have looked drastically different, dramatically different, if women who have sex with women, non-heterosexually identified women, lesbian women, however you call them, were involved in the design of the intervention. And this is just thanking the women who participated in the study and thanking our funders. And so with that, I will see if there are any questions.